Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales through Diamond to retailers for May 2012. As always, this is what Diamond is selling to the retailers, and I say Diamond because in most cases, Diamond's actually buying the material from the publishers and then selling it to the retailers and taking some risk on that. DC and Marvel have a brokered arrangement, so Diamond never actually takes ownership of them. Off the top of my head, I don't recall if that's true for Image, IDW, or Dark Horse, the other premier publishers. Although I believe all three of them, including IDW, are now through the final order cutoff system. IDW only recently getting added to that. So, May 2012, as we know, Chris, this was a big month for trade stuff, because that's when the volume ones of the New 52 stuff hit.
John, we have been waiting for this month since last September, and here we are. I mean, at least I am in the trade sides.
A little earlier, I think, about this time last year.
Like all over this. Yeah, this is it. This is the mecca of the year, man. Let's get to it. I love it.
Yeah, DC, no surprise. It was clearly the front runner this time around.
It better be number one.
Well, it's interesting because it is, and
however.
A lot of it was on the strength of the New 52, but right. Not as much as you might think.
Exactly. Very interesting the way this top 10 or top 20 evened out, you know?
Well, I mean, DC, going by the total units for the top 300 trades, had 31.89%, whereas Marvel had 23.62%, Image had 18.12%, Dark Horse 7.57%, IDW 4.57%, so... You know, we've got a pretty big diversity there, but again, by at least, 8 points and stuff, percentage points between Marvel and DC, with DC clearly the front runner. Now, they did that with a total of 122,972 estimated units. Out of that, and, you know, I could be a little off on this because I did just a quick calculation, I counted up the total sales for the New 52 Volume 1s. I got 46,405 units, and I was just looking at the top of the list, so maybe something snuck in beneath me and I missed it, but that's only about 37.73% of DC's sales for the month. So clearly over a third, but it's not like it was dominating what they did, and of course they've got a strong backlist on the trade side, so that's no surprise that continued to be strong. But you compare that with a couple other publishers. You look over at Image, almost 75% of its sales for the trades was Walking Dead. 52,162 estimated units out of its total of 69,893. So to me, that's a fairly uneven kind of a balance there. I mean, again, Kirkman could you know, walk out of Image, take his stuff, and still have been the third highest selling publisher in May for the trades. Obviously not so much on the comic side, but he's making the money on the trades as well as all the ancillary rights on the TV show, the board games, yada yada.
Yeah,
I mean, he's doing well. but again, we have just a ton of publishers on this list. This time around, we had 29 different publishers, so about twice as many publishers on the trade list as we usually have on the comics list. And again, we've talked about how it's often kind of a three-way split between Marvel, DC, and everybody else. Really, lately, that's becoming almost a four-way split, Marvel, DC, Image, and everybody else.
Well, and you know what else is good is, besides the big four, we've got good reorder activity from a lot of other companies, even if it's just one, like Boom and MBM and Top Shelf has got three reorders with zero new books.
Yeah.
Dynamite finally is coming around, you know, two new ones and one reorder. Avatar, You know, humanoids and Fantagraphics are coming in, which is good to see. And so, yeah, we've got a good all-around makeup of the top 300 this month.
Now, you were saying, aside from the big four, I'm going to push. I'm going to say we should go with the big five. I really
IDW
is in there.
IDW, I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely, big five.
I knew that was a slip of the tongue. I just wanted to kind of toss it in there anyways. I mean, IDW is consistently coming in very strong on the trade side. They're doing very well on the comics side, beating out Dark Horse this month.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they did? Oh, nice.
Yeah. And, I mean, there was a point a couple of years back, it's like, you know, IDW's making the play to get in the front half. Can they really make it or not? That's turned out to be a justified decision all the way around. You know, they're strong on a lot of the licensed properties and stuff. But what's interesting with IDW this time around, again, they were the fifth largest share of the top 300 sales by units, with 17,606 estimated units, all said and done. Out of that, 6,168 of them, which is a little over 35%, is Lock and Key, which is an original property for them. So a third of it for one property, again, an original one, given how much they do licensing, that's pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, I'm just looking on their monthly site, too. You know, they got that Star Trek Next Generation and Doctor Who going on. That definitely helps. That's a big property right there. So,
yeah, I think they're doing some interesting stuff with how they're doing some of their crossovers, how they're working on, you know, maintaining some of the properties. I'd like to see them do a little bit more maybe with the Star Trek stuff because I just enjoy that.
Well, they're doing the Legion crossover.
Well, they finished that one on the monthly side. They've got the Doctor Who. They're going to start a Borg one with the next the July previews. So, I mean, they're doing some good stuff.
You know, I don't know if it's going to hurt them that much, but, you know, the G.I. Joe movie is not going to come out until March of next year. It was supposed to come out this summer. It's being delayed for 3D and reshoots and stuff like that. You know, and they were putting out the prequels to the movie, and that's in its own universe and shouldn't hinder anything that it's going on with, you know, IDW G.I. Joe proper. But I just wonder, you know, you got to feel for them in that aspect of that they've got the rights to do the prequels or in between or the movies, and the next thing you know, it's delayed. And, you know, the prequels are already out, which is kind of a bummer.
Well, it may actually work to their advantage, potentially. I don't know if it will or not, but they've just had the promotional push because they thought the movie was coming out. Not they, but the movie promotional push just happened, which is going to happen again when it actually does come out. And in, what, 8-9 months is how long it's delayed?
Right, yeah, March, they said, yeah.
Yeah, so potentially they get the benefit of two big marketing pushes for a G.I. Joe movie for the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
I got to imagine the toys are, I'm pretty sure they're already out for the movie at the toy stores and stuff.
I think they are, right, yeah.
So that's keeping the property very active in the minds of consumers and kids. So if they can leverage that, and again, IDW has been very strong on the digital front, so I've got to imagine all those comics are already out there digitally. I mean, I haven't checked, but, you know, there is an opportunity there to be had, you know, if they can make that work for them.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe I was thinking about, just hit me, maybe they could do another offshoot prequel somehow, you know.
They've got the time.
They've got plenty of time to do that, something like that.
It also means that the ones they've already done are going to be in trade paperback right before the movie comes out.
Yeah, right.
So it could be a win for them. You know, it's at least not a situation where, you know, imagine if it had been like they did, you know, the Star Trek Countdown prequel, but had found out about the cancellation and had to shelve that, you know, for the duration. Because if you had to sit on a handful of completed books that you've had to pay the creators for but aren't seeing the revenue for 8 to 9 months, that's a bit of a dent in the cash flow.
Well, I think what helped IDW and the Star Trek comic in that realm was, if you recall, Abrams, I don't know if he actually shot it, but it was in the script of when Nero got abducted by the Klingons. And that was, part of it was shot and part of it wasn't, you know, but it was done in the comic book series. So if you wanted that full story, you could have gotten the comic book series.
And well, if you wanted to know more of what Spock was telling Kirk about by the campfire.
And that also. Yeah, exactly.
All of that's in there.
Right, all of that. Yeah, so you get. So you're right. That sometimes you do have the benefit of doing the deleted scenes as it is in something like that.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's something that was being done as a prequel versus a right on the heels after the movie kind of
right.
experience. Mm-hmm. If that had been the case, and again, they had to sit on material, that could have really, hurt their cash flow and been more painful. Whereas this, if they get that second round of advertising for the movie, and you know there's going to be a promotional push for it, as for how big, who knows, it keeps G.I. Joe being talked about for most of the next year. So hopefully that'll work to their advantage. So let's take a look at the top 300 and various bits and pieces. Top one on the list, Justice League, Volume 1, hardcover, the origin story, 8,854 estimated units. That's pretty strong, sales. A little behind it, in rank number 2, is the Court of Owls hardcover for the first volume of the Batman stuff. 8,172 units. So, two hardcovers, both above 8,000 units. And I've got to imagine there's going to be some reorder activity on these going forward.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how
can there not be? And both at $24.99, too.
Yeah. So, I think they did real well with that. Walking Dead, of course, is still riding high with the TV show and just, the phenomenal success it's been really since it started almost. We've got the first volume of the trade paperback. It's reorder activity. We've seen this on the list 87 times before. It did another 7,493 units, putting its total reported estimated sales at 210,233 estimated units. So it's not going to be too long, probably before the end of the year, this will crack 500,000 units on the Diamond charts. That's going to be pretty impressive when that happens.
And it'll be number one for 2012 at the end of the year, don't you think?
Probably. I mean, I haven't really been keeping track on how things are stacking up.
Well, it's there every month. I mean, that's the thing. So
it's going to place well. Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how individual volumes like that of Walking Dead do, and then how Walking Dead in aggregate does compared to the total for Image over the year.
Right.
Because, again, like I said, it's nearly three-quarters of the sales for Image this month. You know, last month it was huge, so it's just a juggernaut. It's insane. Rank number 4, we've got Batman Death by Design Deluxe Edition Hardcover, 7,309 units. That was the one by Chip Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually got that sitting here on my desk waiting to be read with a few other things. Busy time of year for me with Comic-Con coming up. Just haven't gotten back from a trip to Alaska, so I haven't actually had time to read this yet.
Comic-Con, that little thing.
Oh, I know. It's,
in 2 weeks. All right.
Yeah, it's coming earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I did recently, speaking of Chip Kidd, go to, I think it was the TED Talks website and see the talk he did on book design and stuff.
That was really good, yeah.
Oh, very impressive. There are a couple of things as he's walking through, like how the cover is kind of slowly unfolding and revealing more, telling its own story as it pulls out from the shelf, and it's like, never would have gotten that if he hadn't explained it to me. The guy is very clever, very good speaker, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very much looking forward to his Batman story in that hardcover. Now, the one that I think was a bit of a surprise, Animal Man, Volume 1, The Hunt, trade paperback. 5,930 estimated units came in fifth place. That's pretty impressive.
I love this series. Jeff Lemire, and it is a great story. It was a horror title, really. It's not much of a superhero title. I mean, it is superhero, but it's got that horror twist to it, like that Alan Moore Swamp Thing, and that's kind of what they're aiming for, And, it's at $14.99, and you wonder... You never know, right, John? You never know how a book is going to do.
Yeah.
And you always try to second-guess yourself after it comes out, and you wonder if the guys at DC are like, boy, maybe this should have been a hardcover at $24.99, and you wonder if it would have sold just as well, Or as far as the revenue goes.
I think they made the right choice.
Well, they probably did, yeah.
But
I wonder if it's going to come back and they're going to re-release it as a hardcover. Because they could do that, you know.
How often do they do that on Vertigo books?
A lot. You know, okay. Look at the deluxe editions they do all the time. You go back and reprint those and the Constantines and the Preacher hardcovers and stuff like that, you know. I mean, does Preacher really need to be in hardcover? No, you know. But and this is kind of like that Vertigo-esque title, you know. So I could see them maybe a year from now when you put Volume 2, Volume 3 out and then release them as hardcovers. They could do that, you know.
Totally, totally. I think they made the right choice going with a trade, though, because it gives it a low-cost entry point for somebody to get on board with the title and maybe jump over to the monthly side. Because the monthly issue of Animal Man number 9, it hit at rank 63 on the comics list with 35,697 units. Mm-hmm. It came in 31st place out of the new 52, and that's including, you know, the Batman Annual and one or two other things like that. So really, if I take those out, it would be, 29? So a little below halfway in the pack. And for it to have been the third best-selling, you know, collected edition so far, granted we've only got the 1 month, for the new 52, and the best-selling trade paperback, that's a good sign. You know, I think that gives that title a lot more longevity. And I completely agree with you of it being essentially a horror title more than a superhero title, which is, I think, part of why I haven't really clicked with it as much as I might have liked to. I just don't really care for the horror stuff. The whole bit with the rot, I mean, I get what they're doing. I'm finding it interesting, but not something I'm just falling madly in love with myself.
No, it's not for everybody, absolutely. But, I'm kind of into it because I just finished reading Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing, the hardcovers, and this has that feel to it, and it's pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
It established that... Animal Man, you know, he had been part of the Justice League, and he's kind of moved past that, and he's now with his family. But yet, for whatever reason, the Rot and the Red are calling him back into action.
Now, what's interesting with that, and I hadn't really thought about this too much while reading the books, is that did firmly establish he had a past with the Justice League. However, in the Justice League title itself, they've made it sound like it's been a fairly closed membership over the years. And it's just the ones that started the title, essentially, and Martian Manhunter for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that went bad, and they didn't get anyone else in. So at some point, they need to clarify exactly what his relationship has been.
Well, maybe they'll do that with the Zero issues coming up.
They might. I think they're going to do his origin in there, which should be pretty interesting.
Well, and Lemire is taking, if I'm not mistaken, Lemire is taking over Justice League Dark.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised to see Animal Man in that.
He'd be a good fit for that.
Even make a panel appearance. You know what I mean? Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I could see it.
No, I could totally see that too, and it'd be good. Lemire's already done an issue or two of Justice League Dark.
He has, yeah. Yep.
So anyone who really likes this current take on Animal Man really ought to go check out... The first trade paperback of the previous Animal Man series. That was by Grant Morrison, and Brian Boland did the art, didn't he?
I believe so. I've never read that stuff.
Oh, go hunt that down.
I know, I gotta go get it.
It is brilliant.
Yep.
That was supposed to be a four-issue miniseries. That launched the title that went for, 120, 130 issues?
Yeah, something, yeah.
Or maybe 87 or something, I forget how long. It went for many, many years at the very least. Great, great stuff. Now, a little further below, rounding out the top 10 at rank 10, is the Green Lantern Volume 1 hardcover of 4,429 units. So, about half what that Justice League Volume 1 hardcover did. And it's interesting because there's not really that kind of a gap between, you know, well, I guess there's a bit of a gap between Green Lantern and Justice League on the monthly side, more so than I'd kind of been thinking. It's about nearly a 50,000 unit gap on the monthly side. So I guess that kind of makes sense. I still would have expected Green Lantern to have done better, because that was one that I think people had considered kind of a not broken prior to Flashpoint. And they've really kept a lot of the narrative threads going across, you know, the pre and the post reboot. A little further down, we've got Spider-Man Season 1 hardcover, 3,961 units. That's, of course, the part of the Season 1, you know, retelling of the origins and stuff. And I felt they did a really good job with that. I was very pleased with how that's been going. Overall, I've really been liking the Season 1 hardcovers. Have you been reading any of those?
You know, I finally got around to ordering Daredevil. I should be getting it in the next couple weeks for my next order.
Cool.
CBS, yeah. Do you like them?
Oh, yeah. I've been enjoying them. They've had very solid art. Matter of fact, I believe it was the guy who did this one is a local artist here in Austin, Texas.
Oh, cool.
And the writing's been good. They've made a couple of updates, in some cases a bit more tweaks to the story than I think they should have, more with the Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good accessible way to get people into this. I'm going to be curious if they try to go for a second round on some of these titles, kind of what they do and how they do that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to stay pretty iconic and pretty classical in terms of the story and stuff like that, and not, you know, radically revamp it. It's not a brand new take or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they update, they tweak, some cases a little more than they should, but, you know.
Is it a modern Spider-Man?
They're trying to go with the timeless aspect.
Okay.
So there were references to, you know, being able to, he had a phone that could do texting and stuff like that.
So is it like a, is it more towards, like, Ultimate Spider-Man? Like,
well, no, that's the thing, is it's supposed to be pretty much the mainstream Marvel Universe Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
But they're not keeping, you know, the more dated aspects of it. They're trying to keep it contemporary.
Okay.
But they're not trying to radically modernize it either. So all of these, I think, you know, it's they're trying to give an accessible backstory to their main characters in the main universe.
All right. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. I recommend them. I've been enjoying them. Let's see. Next up at rank 14... another one of the Volume 1s from the New 52. This time it's the Catwoman trade paperback, 3,900 units. This is actually showing up as reorder activity, which can't possibly be right because I don't think it shipped earlier.
Yeah.
I think this is getting confused with one of the other various Catwoman Volume 1s that they've done.
Right.
So I'm pretty I'm solid on the 3,900 figure, but I'm going to say that column I've got next to it in my spreadsheet saying it's totaling up to more than that.
That can't be right. No.
This is where my system gets a little wonky when they keep reusing volume numbers, titles, and stuff like that.
Right.
It's less of an issue, although it is an issue on the monthly comics side. But on the trade side, how many times have they just kind of ditched the volume numbers altogether and it's mm-hmm. just hit or miss as to what the previous volume is, was, or what this one is. Likewise, we've got a Batman and Robin Volume 3, Robin Must Die. I'm thinking this actually collects the previous Batman and Robin series, and I probably counted that when I was doing a rough tally for the new 52 Volume 1s. But that did 3,858 units. And then we've got the Wonder Woman Volume 1 hardcover, 3,697 units. So, you know, by and large, some pretty strong sales just in general. We go a little further down to rank 26. We get Justice League International Volume 1 trade paperback, 2,812 units. Further down, we get the Stormwatch Volume 1 trade paperback, 2,380 units. Green Arrow, Volume 1 trade paperback, 2,373 units.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Stormwatch is coming in at number 35 with a respectable number at 2,380 units. How does that compare to what it's doing on the monthly side? If you're at a litmus test, is this title doing better as a trade or than a monthly or vice versa? What do you think?
Give me just a sec to filter the list on the
other
side.
I'm just kind of curious because, you know, just I don't know who's buying Stormwatch, and I'm thinking that it isn't selling well, and people are going to wait for the trade on this. That's what I'm getting at.
There are 32 titles out of the new 52 selling better than it, 13 selling worse than it. So it's in the bottom, you know, quarter essentially at the top of the bottom quarter. It's selling 2,446 estimated units as of issue 9. That's actually down about 3%.
Okay.
This is one that I don't think is going to be necessarily in the next round of cuts or whatever.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, the safest of bets if you were to say looking 2 years out or even a full year out.
What about Green Arrow?
Green Arrow is doing not a whole lot better. About 4,000 units better on the monthly side, 26,964. That was actually up about 9.2, a little over 9.2%. With let's see, the final chapter in the first story arc by Ann Nesenti, which frankly I was not impressed with that story arc myself. But it's, again, when we're in this area on the monthly side, or you know, the low to mid, you know, 20,000s and stuff, those are viable but not strong titles. When they start to dip below that, I mean, what's going to be interesting is to see the trade and collected edition sales for Resurrection Man that they've already announced they're going to end, Savage Hawkman, Frankenstein, Fury of Firestorm, all of which are selling below that Resurrection Man. iVampire, DC Universe Presents, Grifter, Voodoo, Captain Atom, Blue Beetle. And they've already announced a couple of titles that are getting rotated out. Off the top of my head, I don't recall which ones those are. Hang on, let me see if I can dig that up real quick. Certainly something like Animal Man's going to get a little extra leeway just because it's doing well on the collected edition side.
Mm-hmm.
But titles like Resurrection Man, Captain Atom, and Voodoo, I think, are the ones ending, you know, as of the July solicits for stuff coming out in, I guess, September. It's interesting that also one of them that's going to end is Justice League International, but I don't think that's due to sales. It's doing, on the monthly side, 32,556 units. I wouldn't be surprised to find out if that was just a matter of they wanted to reallocate those creators.
Yeah, that could be it.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Aaron Lopresti is moving on to Sword of Sorcery, or Sword and Sorcery, or whatever that one's called, which is going to have Amethyst of the Gem World coming back. Mm-hmm. And I'm really looking forward to that. He's a great artist. That's that was a fun property back in the day.
Well, the showcase is coming out of that, too, of the classic stuff.
Yeah.
So that'll be cool. I think that'll sell pretty well. Yeah.
I wish they would have done that one in color. I like that stuff in color. What can I say? But I think some of these lower-selling ones, you know, are going to have a little bit, I don't say harder time, but high trade or hardcover sales can compensate for less than stellar monthly sales. Likewise, we don't know how these are doing on the digital side. Some of them may be doing surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm.
And between that and just how they want to allocate their talent and stuff on different titles, that's how they're determining what to keep, what to retire. You know, plus how much it's costing them to do the books, what other things they've got in the pipeline. I think it's kind of telling that the DC Universe Presents Zero issue is basically telling stories from five of the titles that were retired.
Right.
So I think they've got some big picture plans they're still trying to put into place. We'll see how all that goes.
Well, isn't I felt like a couple of these titles, like OMAC, wasn't he going to turn up in International or Dark? Or
already
something
has.
Like that?
Already yeah, turned up in International.
Okay.
Which is also ending.
Yeah, right. So
let that be a lesson to you. No, I'm kidding.
Exactly. Right. So I don't know. I mean, these characters are going to be around. It's just they won't have their own title.
It will be fun to see how many...
I hope they bring the Ray back. I love that.
I was just going to mention, it's going to be fun to see if he shows up elsewhere or not.
Or Uncle Sam.
I would like to think that
he was there
in
the end, so...
Well, in the Phantom Lady series could be another place.
Right, that'll be good. Yeah.
You know, or actually, it's a one-shot, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot they can do to keep some of these characters in play, and I hope they find a way to kind of do some rotating stuff with these characters.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, looking at these sales for the hardcovers and trades for the new 52 Volume 1s and some of the other stuff for DC, DC's doing pretty well. I mean, obviously, they had the lion's share of the sales for the top 300 this time.
Yeah.
But, you know, individually, two hardcovers over 8,000 units, that's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. You know? Now, less impressive is Marvel. They had one item one item over about 4,000 units, and that wasn't even set in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. You know, they only had 5 items over 2,500, only 17 items over 1,500 units, and really what that's indicating to me is, in addition to on the monthly side there being lackluster sales, on the collected side there's lackluster sales for Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know, again, that Spider-Man Season 1, that was really... And you could argue if that's technically in the mainstream universe or not. I'm choosing to say that it is for this. Mm-hmm. Because if it's not, the highest-selling thing clearly in the Marvel Universe is that Uncanny X-Force Volume 3 Dark Angel Saga Volume 1 trade paperback. Mm-hmm. Man, that's a long, long name. with 3,275 units. So, I think Marvel... If they're not taking a long, hard look internally or have not already and made plans accordingly, it's going to be rough times ahead for them. Because
They got all the A versus X crap coming out, you know.
Well, and that's just it. People are talking about it, but they're not glowing about it. It's not boosting the sales on the core Avenger and X-Men titles.
You know, I've been reading, I've been picking up Wolverine and X-Men and the A versus X stuff. I don't care about all the fighting that's going on. It's like, it's one big battle after another. But you know what? I've been enjoying the core title, Avengers versus X-Men. I've been enjoying.
Yeah.
It's been a good story. And that's all it needs to be, is a good single story. All this, you know, Thing versus Namor for 25 pages. Who cares? You know, I'm just over that stuff. And it's just, it's not that I don't like the fight. It's that the fight is going on between characters in every single issue. And it's like, this is enough, man. I'm tired of it.
The part that gets me is clearly some of the people at Marvel don't care about the Versus title.
Yeah.
They couldn't even keep it in continuity with the main title.
No, they can't. Yeah.
I mean, the Gambit versus Cap fight happened significantly differently in that Versus title, which was supposed to be kind of a zoom-in mm-hmm. on that fight. It was a different fight.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Is that a big deal? Nah, not really, but it's indicative that they didn't care enough to spend a little bit of time to make sure the events in that story jived with the events in the Avengers versus X-Men story. If they don't care, why should I?
And not only that, John, but, you know, when I'm looking at these fights, I'm looking at it as a boxing match, and nobody talks during a boxing match, and nobody... You know, it's not a schoolyard fight, even. You know, it's like these guys are just word balloon after word balloon after word balloon. And they're just talking smack. And, you know,
I'll give them dramatic license.
Fight, you know,
I'll give them dramatic license on that. And I would say it's not a boxing match. It's a wrestling match.
I get. It's more like a WWE. You're right. You're absolutely right. And maybe that's the audience they're going after.
The part that got me was, and this may be my minor spoilers for some people, if so, I apologize, the Magneto versus Iron Man fight. He whips out Iron Man a bazillion of these little micro, you know, super rare earth magnets or whatever that cost him $1 billion or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait a sec, you just had that in your armor that Magneto couldn't really manipulate because it's not magnetic. Mm-hmm. You had a bunch of these super dense magnets that are going to outdo his magnetism. Really? How? I mean, the physics on that fight, and I'm not a huge physics guy.
Right.
You know, we're just ludicrous. And again, they didn't care. If they don't care, why should the readers?
Well, and then almost, I mean, it's not during the exact same time because it couldn't possibly be. But continuity-wise, Tony's in his laboratory building the giant... the exoskeleton thing that he, you know, it's like, when does this take place again? You know, Tony's all alone and he doesn't have a scratch on him. And I guess I missed something there. You know, I guess I read it out of continuity because in one instance, he's fighting Magneto. In the other instance, he's building his giant Transformers robot. You know,
I'd have to read just the main series in a single sitting to see how horribly they may have messed up that timeline.
Right.
But
and I think So
they've got enough eyes on this, and if not, they should. It shows to me a lack of respect for the readers.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not surprise me that on the monthly side, there's a noticeable difference on how the titles are selling between the main one and the Versus title. I mean, that main title is topping the list around 175,000-178,000 units, mm-hmm. whereas AVX Versus is doing well, but it's under 100,000.
Did I miss something, or is Fantastic Four not really a part of A versus X?
Well, they're currently not really Avengers or X-Men for the most part, although the Thing is showing up because he is an Avenger.
Well, like, I mean, I read, I'm getting caught up on FF, and I really like that title. And I like Fantastic Four, too. And Johnny, the last thing, I forget the number, so excuse me, but the last number, he took the kids into the negative zone. And mm-hmm. doesn't seem like he's fighting in A versus X, and I thought that was just kind of interesting. So he's in the, you know, I think it was a really fun title, though, with Annihilus, and this is spoilers, Annihilus getting the vote, which I thought was, that was awesome.
Well, I think they're giving Hickman, I think Hickman's getting some leeway to kind of do his own thing.
Yeah.
Because he's doing something kind of cool.
Yeah. No, it's really fun. And that's Marvel Cosmic right there for you. But
yeah.
But we do have Marvel Cosmic going on with A versus X, and it's not really a part of it. You know, I'm like, what's going on?
Well, I mean,
that Marvel quirkiness that they've been doing. So
the Avengers versus X-Men title itself has already gone further forward in its plot than the couple of issues right about now for Secret Avengers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, before 27 came out, they already told us how the events of 27, 28, 29 end. They don't succeed. Oh, gee, thanks. I mean, come on, guys. You're killing yourself.
Right.
And those are the sorts of things, which is why, you know, I think it is a large contributing part of why Marvel's sales are just so-so.
Mm-hmm.
They're shooting themselves in the foot. They are, they're focusing on kind of the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the titles that did, you know, decently for them this time around, at rank 29 is Ultimate Comics Spider-Man Fallout trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
2,662 units. Now, of course, its claim to fame is that's when the Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, Miles Morales, was introduced in issue number 4. Now, Bob and I talked about this because on the top comics side, down at rank 276, issue 4 of Ultimate Comics Fallout had 5,791 units of reorder activity. And really what happened is, you know, that title started around 58,000, dropped to a little over 45,000, then about 44,500, then shot up with total accumulated sales of 132,600 on that fourth issue, and then right back down to a little over 41,000 and then a little above 39,000 on that sixth issue. So you see a pretty standard curve with one huge spike for that first appearance. And what's funny is, you know, I had looked up when I was recording with Bob how that fourth issue did at the time, and it was, I'm going to say, around 75,000. I don't have that number in front of me. I should have dug it back up. But, I mean, it did another 60,000 units of reorder activity, as it did about 5,800 in this month. But as Bob and I talked about, the retail rank was just really, really, really low. So, like, they're heavily discounting this. I'm not going to say they're giving it away, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's at a fraction of the cost for the retailers. You know, so for that title to have done 39,000 at its lowest, 132,615 at its highest, to only do 2,662 units as a trade paperback, kind of lackluster there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't recall if this has already come out in hardcover or not. Do you know?
I don't know. I'm guessing I think it has. Let me look that up for you.
All right. Because I can't keep track of when the stuff's coming out in trade or hardcover. I have enough problem keeping up with the comics I'm getting myself.
Give me a minute. I'll look it up.
Yeah. But that's one of those things where, you know, watching how the retail ranking and stuff goes can be pretty informative. Matter of fact, if I take this list on the trade side and filter it down to that price point of $19.99, we see that the item above it and below it at that price point had significantly higher retail rankings, indicating that this too was at a better discount. Matter of fact, there are a couple of the things on the Marvel one where the retail ranking is indicating some aggressive discounting by Marvel, which, you know, hey, that's a tool in their sales arsenal. I can't fault them for using that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's part of why I always rank the stuff by units, not by dollars, and certainly not by the invoice dollars, because there's a lot of shenanigans that can go on with that, some more legit than others.
Let's see. Yes, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man Death of Spider-Man Fallout trade paperback. That's what we're looking at right now, right?
Yes.
Ultimate Comics Fallout 1 through 6. There was it must have already come out, because Ultimate Spider-Man by Brian Michael Bendis Volume 2 collects Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 6 through 10, and that was in June. That was just last week. So maybe it came out in December.
Okay. So it may already be out in hardcover is what we're saying.
Well, there was February, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man by Bendis Volume 1 hardcover collects Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 1 through 5 and Ultimate Comics Fallout number 4.
Oh, so just the one issue.
Just the one issue, yes.
And probably not even the full issue, probably just the relevant few pages.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Let's see, what else do we have that looks pretty interesting? The one that puzzles me is, and this is a new printing of it, so that's I think why it's not showing up with previous sales reported here. At rank 22 is Pro number 1 from Image Comics. This is something.
Pro got that was a reissue, yeah.
Yeah, that's back in print. This has shown up a number of times before, and it's like, I got it. It was good. I'm not going to say it was great.
Yeah.
The fact that it did another, you know, 3,208 units, a little surprising to me. This has a longevity that really, frankly, kind of amazes me. And given that longevity, I'm kind of shocked they haven't done a second one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll sooner or later they probably will.
Well, it's, I think it was an anniversary trade paperback, too, or whatever. But it's okay. Did you ever see the animated one? It's on YouTube.
No, I haven't.
If you look, some guy animated it. And I don't know how they got past the licensing and everything, but if you it's like a 10-minute video of the whole thing. It's really raunchy and really funny. It's something you'd see like out of a heavy metal movie from years, you know, back in the 80s. It's something just like that. Or like a Fritz the Cat kind of thing. It's that type. It's that humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, if you go on YouTube and check it out, it's really just awful at its core, as the Pro is, you know?
Yeah.
It's just animated. I thought it was very funny.
It does what it does very well. I'm just exactly. Surprised that what it does has such shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
Moving over to Boom for a minute.
Hey, real quick, last November 23rd, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, Death of Spider-Man, Fallout Collected, Ultimate Comics Fallout 1 through 6.
Okay, so it did come out already. Yep. All right, that makes more sense then for where those sales were. Again, the way they keep repackaging some of the stuff, it's really hard to keep track of. Is this the first time that material's been collected or not? Thank you for looking that up. Mm-hmm. Moving over to Boom for a minute, we've got it ranked 39, Irredeemable Volume 9, trade paperback, 2,299 units. Down about 5.5% from the total loan sales of the previous volume. We also have Incorruptible Volume 6 trade paperback at rank 61 with 1,753 units. That, too, is down a little under 5.5% or so from its previous volume. Now, really, they're only losing, in the case of Incorruptible, about 100 units, and Irredeemable, about 134 or so.
Are those the final trades?
I think they are the penultimate ones. I think we've got one more because the final issues of those just came out.
Okay.
But, you know, between those two, that is, 4,052 units, which is over half the units for Boom this month on the trade side. Mm-hmm. They did another 3,091 between, you know, the Armory Wars, Tempopo Collection, Snarked Volume 1, and the Planet of the Apes Volume 2. Mm-hmm. So, you know, losing those titles, I think, is something they're going to feel, mm-hmm. Just on the sales side. But they were fun rides while they lasted, and really both of them, I think, had from the get-go kind of a ticking clock of how long can Mark Waid keep the storyline going.
Right.
Which he did for a surprisingly long time, very successfully, I think.
And both titles.
Yeah.
No, you and I have been talking about this series since the first came out. We've both really enjoyed it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think
it gets repackaged into some kind of, you know, they did the one omnibus kind of thing, but if it can get collected into like a deluxe edition hardcover where you collect like two trade paperbacks and one hardcover kind of thing, or three even, you know, that would be really nice.
I would like to see them do that.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully hopefully, but we probably won't because he's gone all digital now.
I know.
See Mark Waid doing a lot more stuff like that. I like to see him really kind of exercise his creative muscles in different directions. And I think his time at Boom, which hopefully is not all said and done, but he did The Unknown, he did Potter's Field. I mean, he's done some really great stuff there. You know, I've read the first installment or so of, what is his digital title called? I'm blanking on it. I'm completely blanking on what that is. It is Insufferable. Insufferable.
Oh, okay.
And what I found is I was trying to read it on my Transformer tablet, but it's too tall of an image to fit on the screen all at once or whatever. It wasn't really set up with tablets in mind. In other words, they took what seemed to be kind of the computer non-widescreen form factor and used that. And I think that's going to be interesting to see how the page size, if you will, plays out on digital comics. Because mm-hmm. I think different hardware has different aspect ratios that play nice and so forth. One other publisher I want to talk about real briefly was NBM.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that we really don't talk about too much because there's not really much of anything I've read from them, just because my interests lie in different areas. But I had read the Ninjago Volume 1 graphic novel, and Volumes 1, 2, and 3 placed on the list this time around, with Ninjago accounting for a little over 51.5% of the total sales for that publisher this month.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes down to, if you've got a successful property, I mean, that's worth a lot. Yeah, they've also got the Three Stooges and a few other things going on, so it's not like they're wholly reliant on that. But I always find it interesting to see, you know, kind of how balanced some of these publishers are, how much some of them lean in a given direction with a particular, you know, property or two.
NBM, for the longest time, had, the way I first heard of them was years ago, they had the Tarzan Sundays, and that was their big time title, reprint title that they had, and I don't know if they still have the rights to it, but they haven't reprinted those in forever. And they had the Terry and the Pirates one too, and
mm-hmm. I remember seeing that in the previews.
Yep. Terry and the Pirates have gotten reprinted by a couple other different companies. I think IDW has got Terry and the Pirates these days, or Fantagraphics. But I would love to see NBM or somebody reprint those Tarzan books. There's like 40 of them, and they are literally like $100 a piece these days because they're just so hard to find. And
yeah,
they had limited edition and all that stuff. And, you know, that stuff I think needs to get reprinted again. It's been a good 10 years, so time to bring it back out, you know.
Makes sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot to be said for somebody, you know, kind of monitoring the value of some of those things that have been reprinted but have fallen kind of out of print and whatnot, and, you know, making sure every decade or two that some of that gets back out there in affordable, printings and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it hadn't been for Boom doing the Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, I mean, I doubt I would have hunted down the version that that Graffiti did all those years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, it was IDW that had the Terry and the Pirates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to. You're right. It needs to come back out, you know.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I think just need to always stay in print. If it's by the same publisher, great. If it's a licensed thing and needs to balance, that's fine, too.
Mm-hmm.
But certain work, I think, just needs to stay out there in an available format at kind of a cover price, not a collectible price.
Well, and it's good to see, you know, the other companies doing like, Hermes Press is doing the Phantom and, you know, the classic Buck Rogers. And they're also doing, Flash Gordon is coming out again from Titan. And, you know, those are the classic strips that, you know, I know it's a pain in the butt when it moves from one company to the next and they don't get the full run or a company goes out of business and everything. But you're right. This stuff needs to stay in print somehow. And if it's not in print, then they need to get it digitally.
Yeah.
And get it out there. They need to render it so it's going to look good on a tablet or whatever, you know, your device is. It just, you know, needs to get out there. So.
Well, and that's where I think the license holders have an opportunity if they can partner with somebody to help them get it into digital, and then they keep it in digital.
But it's got to be a moneymaker, or else they're not going to do it.
Not necessarily. I mean, if they can partner with a publisher who's to get them to do the print edition, make their money on that, as part of that, get that into a digital format that they make for the duration of the license, they make some money on. And then after the licensing expires, the digital revenue just reverts back to the license holder.
Right. Well, I was thinking more of the line, just doing it digital only.
Ah.
Not doing the print. That's where you got to somehow make the money on the digital, but... And I don't know if they're public domain or not. They're probably not. Tarzan or Phantom or the bigger, well-known properties probably aren't.
Probably not, but they're old enough that they could be. I'm not sure.
I don't know how that is.
Actually, I'm thinking Tarzan is because the Lord of the Jungle stuff from Dynamite.
Well, no, there's a big lawsuit going on.
That's right, there is the lawsuit on
that.
There
is
a
lawsuit. And that came about when I was at C2E2. And when I went to the Dynamite panel, you know, Nick Barucci... couldn't really talk about it, what was going on. So if you've got that Lord of the Jungle issues, you know, you may be able to send your kid to college in a couple of years.
That's funny. Yeah.
So we'll see about that.
All right. One of the other publishers showing up this time around, Rank 72, we got Red 5 Comics with Atomic Robo Volume 6, Ghost of Station X trade paperback, 1,596 units. So almost 1,600 units on that. That's actually a little lower than the total known sales for Volume 5. Again, I love Atomic Robo. This is great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I expect to do well over time. Each of the volumes tends to do pretty well. I think they could have more success with this, but I'm not sure what's preventing them from having that. They're doing quality material. They're... for the most part, getting it out pretty much on time. I think they had a hiccup or two on the monthly book they're doing. But Red 5 is a publisher I think is worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see what's going on. Dark Horse is continuing to have some success with the Avatar titles. They've got a couple of them on the list this time around. Let's see. Up near the top, their top-selling one was at Rank 11, Avatar The Last Airbender Volume 2, Promise Part 2, Trade Paperback. 4,193 units. We had reorder activity on the first volume of that, the Promise Part 1 trade paperback, 1,133 units. It's been on the list 8 times before, putting its total known sales at 10,452 units, which would explain why that top-selling one there, the Volume 2 there, looks like it had a nearly 60% drop. Because, of course, it didn't make all that on the first volume in one time. It's been on the list, you know, a ton of times. In addition, there's the Avatar Last Airbender Lost Adventures Volume 1 trade paperback, which I think has had its title tweaked a few times. I'm showing 571 units down at rank 223, but I don't think that's an accurate total reported estimated count, although that's what my spreadsheet's currently telling me. again, for the volume ones that may have just shown up as Lost Adventures, you know, minus the V1 tag initially. I read, I think, that first part of The Promise where they are starting to set up Aang and, I guess, Zuko, Republic City, which, of course, is the setting for the Legend of Korra series that's currently on the air. Have you watched any of this stuff?
I have not, no.
It is fantastic.
Is it? Really?
It is. The basic premise for Avatar is you have different tribes, a water tribe, a fire tribe, an earth tribe, a air tribe, and members of each, not all the people, but some, are essentially elementals. They can control from the water tribe water, from the air tribe air, fire, earth, etc. Some better than others, some not at all, of course. And there's the Avatar, which has control over all of the elements.
Sure.
And there's one of these at a time. And it's like they get reincarnated into somebody else. Aang, the airbender, the last of the airbenders, got frozen, stuck in ice for, you know, about 100 years, a la Captain America.
Right.
Gets thawed out by some kids from the Water Tribe and has to basically go prevent the Fire Tribe from taking over the rest of the planet.
Right.
This goes for a couple of seasons. Great stuff. They have kind of like a martial arts kind of moves they're doing to do the elemental, you know, control or whatever. It's got some thought behind that. It's fairly well written, great characters. And then Legend of Korra takes place two generations later.
Mm.
You know, Katara, who'd been one of those Water Tribe kids who had found Aang, I mean, she could have been, I'm going to say, 16-ish. When the series started, she's now a grandmother and one of the people who had trained Korra, who is the new Avatar at that point.
Oh, you know, cool.
With Aang having passed away maybe 10 years ago, 15, I don't know. Probably closer to 20, because Korra seems about, you know, 17-ish, give or take.
Okay.
But it's got ties to the previous series. It's fun stuff. I'm hoping they're going to do some comics based on it. This is stuff coming out of Nickelodeon and strong property. I'm not the least bit surprised Dark Horse is having some good success with it in comic book format.
My son, I never got into the animated, but neither did my son. But we did see the movie in the theater, and you know it was an M. Night Shyamalan movie. And as bad as the movie was, you know, when you're there with at the time, Patrick was I think 9. You know, he loved it. And I'm like, you know, if my kid loves it, I'm going to like it. So I thought it was pretty fun. You know, I'm like, because I'm going through his eyes. Now, if, I would not go see it by myself, mind you. You know.
Yeah.
But I thought the special effects were pretty cool.
I, alas, have no kids to blame the ownership of the DVD on.
No, that's all right. No, that's cool. But no, I mean, as bad as the story kind of was, you know, and the acting was bad, you know, but it's kid acting. What do you expect? You know? I thought it was a fine movie for what it is.
Well, and they took aspects of at least a season and tried to cram it into a 2-hour movie.
I know, and you can't, it's hard to do. Right?
And things play out at a slower pace, but a reasonable pace, in the cartoon series, which went, again, for a couple of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've got 13 or 14 episodes of Korra that they've gotten out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's... it's a well-conceived series. It's very entertaining for, you know, if you've got kids or whatever, I think it's worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have kids, so it's worth checking out.
I do.
I know. it's fun to see, though, when they can do a good translation of an animated property, keep the art style consistent, keep the characters consistent, and push the story forward. Because really, what's happening in The Promise is that's bridging the gap between the Avatar series and the Legend of Korra series.
Okay.
So, fun stuff. And again, it's great to see Dark Horse having success with that, with Serenity, with Conan, with Buffy, with Star Wars,
right.
Plus some other material, you know, that they've got. They've got a very diverse, you know, lineup of stuff, Hellboy, Umbrella Academy, Axe Cop, you know, things that are original to comics and stuff. So, you know. That's that.
Do you think, a little off base here, John.
Sure.
Do you think that some of these companies are going to merge to compete with Marvel and DC on a larger scale?
I think some of them certainly will not.
Mm-hmm.
I do not see that with Image, Dynamite, IDW, Dark Horse, or Boom, maybe, but I don't think so. I think all of those have strong enough personalities at the helm that like running their own show.
All right.
And they're doing a good job. Now, I do think there is an opportunity to be had for the publishers in the back half of previews to form some kind of an alliance, if for nothing else than just getting the books printed and trafficked through Diamond.
Right.
And the advantage they would have for that is that would give them kind of some collective bargaining power and the ability to move, I don't want to say in mass, but, I mean, let's face it, on the trade side, if you took all of those other publishers together, including like Viz and, you know, a few others that are not tiny, you're still only talking about 14-15% of the sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do that on the comics side, and you are talking 3% of the sales.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really not talking a whole lot, but at that minimal volume, that's where having these things under some kind of an umbrella publishing arm, I think, could give it some, allow them to pool their marketing dollars, get better terms for printing, maybe get a better discount through Diamond. There's some business opportunities to be had without giving up the creative freedom that these publishers have.
Well, I totally agree with that. And I guess I'm just, it's just been bothering me lately, and it's been going on for years, that I see Dark Horse getting the license to do Marvel statues, and I see Doctor Who in Star Trek, and I see, well, not even, your Legion in Star Trek, and, you know, just a bunch of other companies do this. And, you know, Archie has got its own comic book company, but yet you see the reprints coming out from IDW and Dark Horse. And I know that one publishing company like Archie probably couldn't do it all, and that's why they need to license it out, and somebody wants to do it. And I'm sure they're making money in the back end. But, you know, it's just wonder, you know, bring it all together, or, you know, because I guess I look at it as sort of like tech companies working together almost. And, you know, they share software and they share ideas, or, you know, a couple of automobile companies like Toyota and Ford coming together on technologies. And you see it in business all over the place. But I wonder if there couldn't be, you know, takeovers like we see in the other industries. And we don't really see that in the comic book industries.
Well, we've seen some of that in the past with Marvel swallowing up Malibu, with DC acquiring Wildstorm.
But nothing lately, though.
No. But part of it is, again, a lot of the ones that are of size, so to speak, again, have strong people at the helm, for better or worse, that are happy doing their own thing. And I think that's true at some of the smaller publishers, too. Now, I think we've seen some interesting cases over the years where companies like Archie license out some of their characters elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They did that with the Red Circle line of characters that went over to be Impact for a while, got brought into the Marvel Universe, are now kind of back at Archie, and Archie's actually doing a superhero comic with the New Crusaders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of it there for licensing those out is as much a branding issue as anything else. If you see an Archie comic, you have certain expectations as to the type of content, the tone, the style, etc. You know, for better or worse, an Archie comic is an Archie comic. And if you were to try to tell any kind of a really hard-hitting, mature, or sophisticated superhero storyline under an Archie banner, that just wouldn't work. That would be, and even if it did, it would be a bad idea because it would dilute the Archie brand.
Right.
So the style we're getting on the New Crusaders is much more of an all-ages, young reader-friendly kind of a title versus what we got over at Impact or even the more recent Red Circle stuff, which, while still all-ages, was not as all-ages as an Archie comic. For some of these other things, it just makes sense when, you know, they can do a a good crossover with another company and stuff, like the Legion Star Trek stuff or whatever, why not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a fun thing. It's it actually worked fairly well versus the X-Men Star Trek one back in the day, which just felt a little, you know, awkward and a little forced.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well, it was also tying into the movies too.
Yeah. You know, it's I would like to see some of these smaller publishers being more cooperative, working together, and leveraging their individual talents and combining to where they've got, you know, they can leverage the talents of, hey, one company's really good at trafficking the books through previews and getting stuff out on time, maintaining that. Maybe they can help the other publishers. That's a rising tide lifts all ships situation.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, really, as we've seen by these numbers, we've got three distinct playing levels in this game, if you will. You've got Marvel and DC. They're the top echelon by an order of magnitude, both on the comic side and often on the trade side as well. Then you've got those middle publishers, Image, IDW, Dark Horse, to a lesser extent, Boom and Dynamite. That's that middle layer, and it's mm-hmm. closer to that lower level of the small press, the mom-and-pop shops. But those mom-and-pop shops and small press, that's where a lot of the cutting-edge stuff, where a lot of the what's now named talent, Brian Michael Bendis, Greg mm-hmm. Rucka, and stuff like that, that's where they came from 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, bolstering that part of the market is, frankly, an investment in the future for everybody, for the retailers, for the creators, for the publishers, even Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where they're going to let other people, you know, prove themselves out and then, you know, kind of pick from the it's kind of like the you know, high school football, college football, and professional football.
Right. No, it is. You're right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to have somebody in 10 years' time or whatever to play on your professional sports team, well, you might want to support the college and high school football teams.
Right.
You know, it just makes sense.
And they do have standout talent of their own.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So
I guess I was wondering the other night, you know, what would happen if Dark Horse, Image, and IDW decided to team up into one company? You know, what would that do for the industry? And it would shake it up, for sure. But you'd have to cut a bunch of titles out because you can't have all those titles going at once.
Well, you could.
Would just be too, well, I think it would be you'd have to cut something out. I mean, cut the fat a little bit. You know?
I think the problem is you would wind up with at least two distinct branches, if not three, of that merged kind of a company.
Yeah.
One that's doing all the licensing stuff, and Dark Horse and IDW do some of that very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
You then have the kind of the Image Central line of, you know, solo creators doing their own thing on their own time. It's been yet another month, and we still haven't seen the second issue of Non-Player ever get
right.
solicited. You know, flip side, we have seen America's Got Powers
mm-hmm.
getting more issues solicited. I was a little worried about that. So you'd have those branches. You'd have then kind of the studio branch, if you will, of, you know, the Kirkman, the Liefeld, not the Liefeld, the Larson, you know, McFarlane, the Top Cow, Magnolia for Hellboy and his
right.
stuff. You know, those sorts of the Lock and Key, you know, those little camps, if you will, that are not the licensed properties, but they're not the kind of, you know, miniseries and done sorts of creators you've got doing a lot of Image books.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you could find people to head those three different branches and play to people's strengths, etc., that could work out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But at which point you've got one umbrella company essentially operating as essentially three different companies anyways.
Right.
Granted, the split's different than how it currently is divided between Image, Dark Horse, and IDW.
Well, and at DC, you've got DC proper, and you've got your Vertigo, and Marvel, you've got your 616 and your Ultimate line and your Stephen Kings of the world over there too. So,
well,
you've got different branches at every company,
true.
The two major companies.
But Marvel and DC, if you look at it, I'm going to phrase what you said just a little bit differently. You've got their mainstream superhero universe for both
mm-hmm.
companies. You've got their licensed properties for both companies. You've got their kids comics for both companies.
Right.
and you've got kind of that mature readers stuff, mm-hmm. and then maybe a fifth of, well, whatever else is left.
Mm-hmm.
But really, their delineations on how they've done it is not that different between Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're kind of playing by very similar-ish rules, but they've gone about it very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel felt the need to have its catalog split out from previews. DC did not.
Right.
You know, Marvel's doing a lot of double shipping of titles. DC is not. There's very different mindsets. DC's mm-hmm. holding the line at $2.99. Marvel is not.
$2.99. Depends how big the book is.
Well, for standard length comic.
Right, I know.
DC committed at the beginning of last year to do that, and they committed to do it for a year.
Right.
Here we are 18 months later, and they're still doing it for the foreseeable future.
Right.
So I don't think they get enough credit for that, because if they really wanted to bump up their dollar sales, would not be hard for them to do, you know. And I applaud the fact that they're looking at this at the long term and not just how much can they get this month.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I don't see that kind of forward-looking approach at Marvel. And I think that's again, reflective in their sales. Let's see. Looking
what else
at the,
we got?
Well, looking at the price points, the popular ones are $14.99. We got 50 items there. 52 items at the $19.99. 36 at $24.99. 23 at $29.99. Let's see. One item at $125. Another item at $75. Another two at $99. We still seem to be fairly heavy on the lower price tag items. One as low as $4.99, which, again, should that really be on this list? We're seeing, though, a lot more stratification in the price points. Things at the $10.99, $11.99, $12.95, or $12.99, or $14.95, or $15.99. I mean, a lot of different kind of esoteric price tags go in there. Not the standardization that we're seeing on the monthly side. And we're starting to see stuff creep towards the higher end of the price spectrum than we had seen before. You know, 23 items at the $29.99, another at the $29.95. So that right there, you know, add in the 13 at the $34.99, and that's you know, well over 10% over at just about at or over the $30 price point.
Mm-hmm.
Add in the ones above that, and that's 63 items, so that's, you know, 20% of the list right there. So I think we're starting to see a bit healthier of, you know, a marketplace in general. We're doing decent sales on the trade side. It was huge, huge month in terms of dollar sales on the comic side. This was, I think, the second highest dollar total for the trades behind November 2008. Granted, this gets a little dicier on the trade side since they've changed the length of the list a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But that total dollar amount was only about $35,000, $36,000 more back then than what it was this month. I mean, the total estimated dollars for this month, about close to $8.3 million. Whereas last month, it was around $6.8 million.
That's a nice jump.
Yeah. But that's also why you really can't compare the difference between, you know, percentage and stuff from month to month. It just
right.
doesn't work that way. You know, so when people say that, you know, gee, DC had, you know, 31.89% of the units this time around, and last time they had 21.43. Oh, it jumped by 10%. Well, no, it really didn't. I mean, in this case, it actually jumped by about 52,000 units, which is pretty huge.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have times where they sell more and have less of a percent. Take, for instance, the DC sales in February and March of this year, where they had 24.36% of the units in February with 65,766 units. The next month they had 21.19%, so, you know, a little over 3% less, but they did that with nearly 2,000 more units. So again, you just kind of understand what the numbers are, what they mean, to kind of interpret them properly. And it's not hard to do, but it's easy to make some simple mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, by and large, not a bad month for trades in general. I think it was a really good month for DC. I'm very pleased to see that the new 52 Volume 1s were well-received, particularly that Animal Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also happy that, and the fact that DC was able to have strong sales elsewhere, and it wasn't just that was propping them up. If we had seen a complete, lack of sales for any of the pre-52 stuff, pre-new 52, I should say, I'd have been a little worried by that. But we're still seeing some Brightest Day sales, sales on, Nightfall, The Road Home for Bruce Wayne, that kind of stuff. It'll be fun to see what kind of reorder activity we get on these new 52 titles going forward, and where some of the ones that have ended, like Static Shock and Mr. Terrific, where those land in coming months.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer that we're going to get reorder activity on Justice League and Court of Owls and Animal Man and Green Lantern. But, I don't know how much on International and Stormwatch and Green Arrow we're going to get.
Or Catwoman and Wonder Woman.
Catwoman, yeah.
You're right. There are a couple of those that really... Time will tell.
I do like Wonder Woman, though. That's turned out to be a pretty interesting series with the delving into more of the mythology and not more of the superhero aspect. It's pretty cool.
I feel they failed to establish her character and her status quo as well as I would like. I feel I'm getting more of some of that in Justice League than Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, at this point, that's my beef with the new 52. It's been 10 months, and I don't feel I've been able to kind of adopt these as the quote-unquote real version of the characters just yet. I'm still, in my mind, comparing them to the pre, Flashpoint versions that I'd grown to know since Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, that switch will flip for me, and I'll buy into these and consider them the quote-unquote real ones, but they're just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you got coming up on your show?
Well, I did do a podcast last week,
cool.
Issue 330. I talked about Nick Fury and my disappointment in pretty much the volume 3 of the Masterworks. I love the Jim Steranko stuff, fantastic stuff. I could read it over and over and over again. And I kind of say if there's ever going to be, I kind of go into, that's kind of the origin of Nick Fury, if they're ever going to do the movie. Do a little bit of that, but then go into Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., the miniseries that they did with Bob Harris a few years in the mid-80s. That's got movie written all over it. But more recently, coming out by the time this podcast is out, I will have an interview with British science fiction author Pete Crowther, who is head of PS Publishing out of London. So that's kind of neat. They're doing a bunch of Harvey comics and stuff like Forbidden Worlds and that kind of stuff, reprints over there in England, and they're bringing them over to the United States. And I wasn't really even aware of this company. I knew who Pete Crowther was, more of an author. I didn't know he ran a publishing company.
Interesting.
So it's pretty cool to see all this. And we even talk a little bit about the differences that is going to be his version of reprinting Forbidden Worlds compared to what may be coming out from Dark Horse with their reprints of Forbidden Worlds, because it's all public domain. And it's kind of an interesting little, which is better, which is not better, what are we offering, what are they offering, kind of thing. And they're going to be coming out at the same time, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Who can do a better job?
That's where it becomes a meritocracy and a marketing war.
Yeah, well, Pete's company is going to be doing 5 issues, and Dark Horse is going to be doing 4 issues. And they're going to be the same price. Now, I'm curious to... I'll do a comparison side-by-side when Dark Horse isn't coming out until December.
Right.
So I'll sit down and I'll do a video between the two differences. Same cool. material, different book. So,
yeah. See how they package them, what decisions they made. Very interesting.
Productions, the way they look, the size, the feel, the paper. I'm sure you're going to see some differences right on the page.
Yeah.
and the price and that sort of thing. So that kind of stuff is always fun to do.
Cool.
Yeah. What about you? What's coming up on?
Let's see. What's coming up on us? We're doing, again, the Weekly Comic Spotlight. Next up is going to be Before Watchmen, Comedian, number one. Secret Avengers, number 28. And Critter, Volume 2, number 1 from Big Dog, Inc. I've been enjoying a lot of what Big Dog, Inc. is doing. They're a small publisher, not very big, but they've had some fun stuff, and I like Critter. After that, it's going to be just about time again for the next preview spotlight, so please, people, send in clips for that. And YouTube, you're always welcome to do so, Chris. I know you're a busy guy, but we appreciate all the clips we get from anybody. It could be a creator, it could be another podcast, or it could just be a listener. Because really, I mean, I'm trying to help boost these sales of the trades and the comic stuff at the pre-order stage, because that's when stores and that's when I pre-order my stuff. And I think it's just more effective to let people know about cool things at that point in the game versus, hey, it's just hit your store shelves and already sold out, so you can't get it. So we got that. And then, of course, we've got Comic-Con coming up. I'm going to be driving out for Comic-Con, as I always do, and be out there for the full week. Should be lots of fun. I'm staying at a hotel kind of off-site over by the airport. I'm at the, I forget which hotel. It's the Homewood Suites, I think it is, over at Liberty Point or Liberty Station or whatever they call that. So I'm not going to be right across the street for the first time in forever. Not looking forward to that point, but it's a good hotel, so I'm looking forward to that. Should be a good convention, as always. We're going to have the podcasting panel. Bob will be representing the Comic Book Page podcast this year. So
nice. Who else is on it?
The usual suspects, I think. Same couple of people as before. The guys from iFanboy, Indie Spinner Rack, I would imagine. Yeah.
Has that been posted on the Comic-Con website?
Not yet. I'm at the point where I'm making daily and sometimes more frequent checks on that to see when they're going to post the exhibit hall list, the exhibit hall map, the panel schedule, all of that.
It's a few weeks away. They better get it up there. Maybe this week it'll be up by the time we're...
They usually do it 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
And I've had discussions in past years of why do you wait so long, and I guess they see it as a competitive thing. I don't know. I wish they would do it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily months and months earlier, but I mean, by now.
Yeah, by now, 3 weeks out instead of two weeks out, yeah.
I spend the week before essentially, you know, commuting out there and taking care of some other stuff, hanging out with Bob, things like that. So to have very little time to peruse that, you know, at my home base here, really kind of is a little frustrating.
Right.
I'm not as young as I once was. I'm not as energetic as I once was. Now, granted, I've been going to San Diego Comic-Con for like 30 years, so
right.
That's no big surprise that I'm not quite as energetic as I was as a 16 or 12-year-old or what have you. and the convention's gotten to be about, you know, a bazillion times bigger. So
it's massive.
That's part of it, too. So really, at this point, I'm starting to prep for that, make sure I can get the preview spotlight kind of started to get that squared away before I leave. I think I'm going to wind up editing that on the road, which I'm not looking forward to. Plus, doing a live episode with Bob of the Weekly Comics Spotlight. I believe the next set of numbers are being released probably either that day I leave town or the Friday of Comic-Con or that Monday, probably the 9th or the 16th. So, you know, we usually talk after the convention anyway, so it won't impact us.
As far as collected editions go, John, are you looking to buy anything when you're out there? Do you want that, like, elusive, you know, Howard the Duck omnibus that is sold out or, you know, anything like that? I mean, is there anything or even a trade paperback for $10 that you're looking to get to complete your run or something like that?
Not really. The one thing, if somebody were to bump into me at con and say, hey, this booth has this, come follow me, I'll show you where it is, that I would say, yes, please show me, would be that artist edition for The Rocketeer.
Ah, there you go. And how much would you be willing to spend on that?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
A fair price.
150?
Keeping in mind I'm a cheapskate. No, 150 I could do. 150, yeah. I do. If it were 100, I no problem.
If it was
problem.
In plastic.
Yes. Right? Yeah. If it's you know, it's, yeah. mint in boxes, those come, you know?
Mint in box, right.
That would be something I'd do. If it's one that's been flipped through and you know, log-eared or whatever, it's like, no, I want this pristine. Mm-hmm. That would be something I'd spend some money on. But really, I buy so much of what I want in pre-order format, there's not a whole lot I go looking for.
Right, exactly.
The stuff I would... the places at Con I usually drop some money at are Atlas Games. Uh-huh. They tend to be over in the high number section. They've got an L-shaped booth. That's where the guy who does PS238, Nodwick, and... I'm blanking on his other properties, and I'm blanking on his name because it's been far too long since PS238 came out. Excellent, excellent stuff. He's got a little corner thing at their booth. I spend a couple hundred dollars on role-playing games. That's the big expenditure for me every year at Con. But if there was a place that had Super Sentai reference books and toys and crap like that, I'm gonna have my credit card. It's got a decent limit. They could make some money. I'm an easy mark for some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there's not any kind of elusive holy grail for the most part for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm such a instant gratification guy when it comes to the monthly order form or delayed gratification. It takes a few months. But the point is, if I want it, I get it. Mm-hmm. I am not the kind of collector to maintain a search list of, you know, look for this, that, and the other during Con.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that Artist Edition Rocketeer, the downside is that thing's not light and that thing's not small.
Right, right. Well, you are driving, though, which is a plus. You don't have to package it on an airplane or anything.
True. Once I get it to the car, it's not a problem.
Right.
But that's a pretty damn big convention center.
Oh, it's huge. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And just lugging that thing around or whatever. You know, the those are the sorts of things that sometimes factor in. I usually schedule the annual purchase at Atlas Games for when I'm ready to leave the convention center and go across the street to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, the hotel won't be across the street this year. So a couple of things like that I got to figure out.
Right.
But, yeah, definitely looking forward to Comic-Con. Always a fun time. Anyone who's listening, if they're going to be there and want to hook up with me and talk or whatever, send me an email ahead of time. Let me know. I will be at the podcasting panel. That's going to be Thursday, 6:00. I'm not positive off the top of my head which room it's in. It'll be on the panel or on the schedule and stuff.
It'll be recorded for sure.
Oh, well, I'm going to record it. I'm going to try to get it up for the Friday release that
you
week.
You got it up. I remember last year, I think you did it. It got up like within minutes after you guys were done recording the thing.
I don't know about minutes, but it got up pretty damn quick. It was certainly the next day.
I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt.
That's very kind of you. But that sets expectations I will not be meeting this year. Because after the panel, we go out for dinner.
Right, right.
Which I really enjoy. Pants from Comic Geeks Speak is usually on the panel. I'm hoping he's going to show this year. I did not really get a chance to talk with him last year. Want to sit down and talk with him this year. Always enjoy talking with him.
We hung out at C2E2 together. He was standing right next to me the entire time. So
Brian Christman is a great guy, very knowledgeable. Usually gets some amazing original art deals. I mean, he's shown me a couple of pages he's gotten in past years and told me the price. It's like, damn, you got it. How did you do that?
Well, and he spent money at C2E2.
I believe it.
Yeah.
But he spends it wisely. I give him credit for that. He's got very impressive...
Well, you single guys just manage to have money in your pockets, and I don't know how you do it, so don't get married.
Yeah, that's the secret. That's the secret.
No kids.
It's not being single. It's the not having been married part of it that matters.
Yes, kids. That's right.
But, yeah. So, next couple of weeks are going to be kind of busy for me, just with the con, getting stuff ready beforehand. Catching up afterwards and trying to stay current on my comic book reading.
Mm-hmm. Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's a losing battle right now. I mean, I just got back from a week in Alaska on a cruise ship. So I just today got shipment from DCBS a little bit late because it had been sitting at the UPS store.
Did you read anything on your trip?
Actually, yeah. I'd loaded up my Transformer with some e-books, read some stuff. And then as we're flying back, my sister's stopping at the bookstore at the airport, and it's like, oh, do we have this Star Trek novel for the Department of Temporal Investigations? I'm like, no, we got the first one. This is the second, so she's bought that, and we're those are fun to read. And I like reading those types of things around the same time as my sister, who's also into Trek, although to lesser degree than me, more so in certain areas, less so on the original series. But because she'll pick up on things I miss. I'll know some of the backstory she'll miss, and it makes for a fun conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, both of us got degrees centering around narrative studies, storytelling, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we love sitting and watching TV and reading books and talking about, you know, how was the story told? Was it done well? What did you like? What did you not like? What could they have done differently? You know, anyone who's listened to me review a comic book on the Weekly Comic Spotlight has some idea of how I think about story. For right or wrong, that's just how it is.
You got to get your sister on a show.
I've thought about it, but it's going to take a little bit of doing just in terms of finding the right material that'd be a good conversation.
Right.
Because she goes to con every year, has for ages, at least 20 years. I know this because there is an artist who I will be kind and not name, who I had commissioned a sketch from.
You've told me this. Yeah.
1991. Hey, you're local, I'm local, can I do it later? I'm like, yeah, sure, because he needs to make other money doing other sketches during con. I had no problem with that. And then, you know, one thing led to another. He got busy doing other stuff, and next year came. That was the one year, I think it was 1992, that I missed San Diego, sent my sister as my proxy to basically, among other things, hound this guy in Artist Alley.
Huh.
He still kind of playfully cringes as he sees me walk by. He's a great guy, don't get me wrong. But that was one of those. It took a year or two to get the sketch. And one thing leads to another. I got the sketch. He gave it to me for free. He was really cool about it. Still feels bad about it. Which, you know, hey, things happen. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
But she's been going ever since. Since before then. Which is why she was going there. And she loves it for different reasons than I do. The TV, the movies, that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
And if I can find something that'd be worth having her on the show for, it's a good discussion, I will. If I can talk her into it, at least. So, but yeah, that's kind of what I've got going on. Like I said, going to try to keep up on my reading, get the podcasts out and stuff like that. So, we'll talk next month after the con. Once the numbers are out.
We have a lot to talk about, yeah.
I'm looking to you to keep track of all the big announcements on the trade side and fill me in on the next episode of this, because I'm busy walking the show floor as one of the outcasts from The Walking Dead. I'm very much in a zombie state at times.
Well, if anybody wants to follow what's going on the trade side, follow me at ChrisCCL, and anything on the digital side can be found at DGTL Comics.
Cool.
On Twitter. So I'm going to be covering both. And you can follow them both right now if you want to. So
excellent.
Excellent.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied.
Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.